The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, over the rainbow, gotta let it go.
So far, the rain is a gun.
Welcome back to Open the Voice Gate for December 7th, 2021. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling feed or on our own dedicated podcast feed on all podcast platforms and applications. You can follow us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. If you would like to donate to the show, click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing site. Click the red box to sponsor this podcast, and you can set up a one-time or recurring donation. No obligation whatsoever, but we would like to thank all of our previous donors. I'm one of your hosts. It's your old pal, I'm Mike Spears. Joining alongside, as always, my co-host, friend Case Lowe. And Case, it's probably, like, with exception of the other week where this happens, this is the busiest Dragon Gate week of the year. We had four shows over the last week, but how are you holding up?
I'm holding up okay. It's a very busy time from quite literally every aspect of my life, but not only is it one of the busiest weeks of the Dragon Gate calendar, over the past 7 days, you know, we recorded last Tuesday, mere hours before a Cork and Hall show that we thought was going to be pretty cut and dry, and as it turns out, over the past week, we have had quite literally, I think, one of the most newsworthy and shocking weeks in the history of this promotion, with one of the single most shocking match results in a promotion that is known to bob and weave and to swerve and to go left when people are thinking they're going to go right. Simply put, one of the most shocking finishes in the history of the entire company that all unfolded within this past week. And then plus we had three other really good shows that we have a bunch of news and notes on. So yeah, it was a good week to be a follower of Dragon Gate.
Yeah, this was the bang for your buck week on the Dragon Gate Network between Corkin. We had the Soy Sato debut match go up there as we expected. They had the director's cut Takumi Hayakawa's one. And then you get into three nights in Sapporo, their semi-annual triple header that they do up there. So because there's four shows, we will talk about the results in this show, but there's just so many big topics that kind of flow in together this week that it's just, we got to lead off with the big shocker. Something that's probably the most shocking Apuestas match in Dragon Gate history or Dragon System history, and probably the most shocking result of a match since Shingo Takagi losing the Open the Dream Gate in his second or his first defense in 2013. At Corkin on Wednesday was the Mascara contra Mascara Apuestas match. Loser loses their mask. Diamante and Dia Inferno versus Shun Skywalker and Dragon Dia. And if somehow there was if my bookie did Dragon Gate bets there, someone could have, I won't say they'll be able to like buy a car off of the bet, but they would be able to, you know, bring back some nice money on this if you're someone who bet on Dragon Dia losing his mask after Shun Skywalker was distracted. It was something that they played up in the match, but Shun has not really brought up ever since. The finish was that Shun got his mask slid to the side, obstructing his visions. He shoved Dragon Daya into Diamante, who hit him with the Vuelta Finale to get the win. Diamante 2-0 in mask matches this year. Dragon Daya is unmasked. We did not get his name as is standard in a when someone is a loser of a mask match, but it's probably because SB Kento came out, because neither Diamante or Daya Inferno were going to talk. Basically shit talk, ripped off his mask, and then Daya Inferno grabbed the microphone, spoke for the first time, saying, "I came here to destroy Dragon Daya. Now that he's destroyed, there's no need to be Daya Inferno anymore." Rips off the giant rubber mask, looked very relieved. It was Yuki Yoshioka, who stormed off by himself. And ever since then, Masquerade is a complete upheaval case. Tending to Daya was Estrella, Jason Lee, and Kota Minenora. Shun Skywalker looked beside himself in the aftermath, could not look Dragon Daya in the eye. And then since then, on the Sapporo triple shot, neither Dragon Daya nor Yuki Yoshioka were on the shows. Estrella stayed home as well. So Masquerade was just Shun and the two more senior members of the unit, being Jason Lee and Kota Minenora. Shun Skywalker was trying to go like everything was fine, but the look on Jason Lee and Kota Minenora's face during the introductions, they weren't even doing the whole masked entrance anymore, and the misfires that happened. Masquerade might be on a countdown clock coming out of this, and it's all due to Shun causing Dragon Daya to lose his mask. So, biggest news item of the week, Case. How should overall, your written review is up. I completely was stunned by this result. The Dragon Legacy looks like it ends with Problem Dragon, weirdly enough. And now that the world is, it's what was probably the most safe unit in Dragon Gate at the time, now looks like it's the one that could be on the way out before the end of the calendar year.
A stunning finish. I mean, this caught everybody by surprise, from you and I, who cover this promotion closer than anybody, from people parachuting in, from people that really might only know the names of this promotion, that don't even necessarily watch the promotion, or if they do, they're only parachuting in for the biggest shows or the biggest matches of the year. This caught everybody by surprise. Did you at any point even consider the possibility that it was going to be Dragon Daya that lost his mask?
No, in the lead up, not at all. I it would have been, oh well, everyone else got, someone got injured or Daya got injured and they weren't able to, you know, work the finish. Like, that was the chance I would have given him losing his match, because, and Jay made a big point of this, like, this guy was the heir to Dragon Kid, who is the heir to Ultimo Dragon. As we've said, since Daya debuted, this will be the most important mask in the promotion. Like, there's a reason why Dragon Kid, whenever he's in a mask match, the safe bet is betting on Dragon Kid, because he's not gonna lose his mask. That was the assumption going into this. And I guess, like, my big, like, other than like the shock, my big thing is they must now think that Dragon Daya had a higher ceiling than being Dragon Daya, than being the heir to the legacy. Because you look at Dragon Kid, fantastic career, a career 99.999% of wrestlers would take. But he's never been the guy. And maybe that's why he lost his mask, is they think that Dragon Daya, we don't know his name. He's not listed on the Kyoto show this weekend, so he might make an appearance there and reveal his name, whatever gimmick going forward. But they might have higher aspirations for Daya, I guess, is like one of a facet coming out of this. Do you think I'm off base in saying that?
No. And that's such a remarkable statement, given the fact that his entire character had 20 plus years of built-in cachet with this audience. He was the biggest layup in terms of finding his footing on this roster. He debuted at the end of 2018 and had an incredibly hype debut. He was dealing with some medical stuff early on, dealing with some sicknesses. But once he got past that, once we hit into kind of the middle portion of 2019, this is someone who knew who he was, who was just progressing at such a rapid rate. I called him last year one of the single most exciting wrestlers in the world, not because he was producing, you know, match of the year contender after match of the year contender. It wasn't, you know, like Dragon Daya every time he was going out there was like peak G1 season, or that he was Kenny Omega, or even the best wrestler on the Dragon Gate roster, you know, a KZ or a Susumu or an SB Kento or whoever. But there has always been a level of innovation with Dragon Daya. And part of, you know, what we learned from talking to Jay and talking to Larry Dallas is that this guy is seemingly only doing a fraction of what he's capable of. He's an athletic freak. And the other thing that Jay has mentioned on this very podcast before is that Dragon Daya underneath the mask is a very handsome man. And although he was covered in sweat and tears, only missing the blood aspect of blood, sweat, and tears after this mask versus mask match, you got to see, hey, you know what? Dragon Daya is a pretty good looking guy. I think it is a huge seal of approval for his future that he was unmasked and not a reflection of possible character failure or the gimmick not getting over to the degree that Dragon Gate would have wanted for the reason that he was unmasked. I look at this only as a positive.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting. It's all going to be the payoff to see like how he's positioned from here. Like, this is a seismic change for someone who's still just crossed 3 years as a pro wrestler. Was someone that, like, he was called Dragon Daya because they thought, like a diamond, he had endless potential, and now we're going to see that at play. And now we kind of shift gears in his career, that, like, it was such a big deal, the fact that they had a new generation Dragon, and that they had seemingly the rival for a while to put, like, the stamp of approval, because it's textbook, you know? Dragon Kid had Darkness Dragon. And it just felt like, okay, we're seeing some neat, like, mirroring of that. But they went into a direction. Now one can argue that you could say, okay, Yuki Yoshioka, that's going to be a career-long rival for the former Dragon Daya, just because of the feud. You had Daya versus Daya. But now you have the Shun aspect put into this. And with how things have happened with Shun Skywalker, and now everything kind of falling to pieces around him, Dragon Daya now has a rival in him, and that's a big match, I would say. And it'll be interesting to see if that's going to be something they're going to tease out, how they're going to play this out, because Yuki Yoshioka looks like he's no longer a member of RED as Daya Inferno. Looks like he's his own guy. No one wants anything to do with Shun Skywalker, and now Dragon Daya is probably like the most righteously aggrieved person coming out of that match.
What Dragon Gate did here is so interesting, and I wrote this in my written review, and it speaks to why I know I love this promotion as much as I do, because although I legitimately think it's the most talented roster on Earth, I think they're the most consistent promotion on Earth. It is times like this where Dragon Gate will punch you in the stomach and you will thank them for it. It is such a dom sub relationship, in the fact that this is not what I was anticipating at all. But I can't argue with this move. Like, I think that I'm so excited by the result of this match, way more so than I would have been by Dragon Daya just pinning Daya Inferno and us going on as we thought we would. This is, and this is a dangerous term to use on a wrestling podcast, given the way that the word moment has been co-opted, but this is a moment, and it has been a very long time, to a point that I'm not even really sure of the last time, where an angle in Dragon Gate, a story in Dragon Gate, was the main talk of this promotion on the Western side of the fan base. For the past few years, we've had a lot of great matches. There's been a lot of cool things that have happened, but this angle really brought us back, or at least brought me back to 2015, 2016, when there were a ton of eyeballs on this promotion, and it seemed like people were really investing in the depths of the stories that were being told here. This was one of those moments where, when we look back on 2021, it was a strange year. It seemed like they never totally found their groove. You have Masato Yoshino going away. You have all these rookies debuting. And I think those are two things that are going to stand out when the history of this promotion is written. But now we're going to have to talk about Daya unmasking. This is absolutely a moment. And when I think about this year going forward, this is going to be one of the things I think of. And it's so exciting because whereas, you know, Yoshino retiring was obviously such an incredible display, there was an end to that. What we have here between Daya and Yoshioka and Skywalker is the beginning of something. These are now guys that are going to be attached at the hip for years and years and years to come until their careers are likely no more. This was a powder keg of storytelling put into this match, and we're going to be dealing with aftershocks for years and years and years. I mean, I'm just so blown away. It's amazing. You know, Diamante was arguably the best wrestler in this match. He was kind of the guy carrying the bulk of the weight, and he was just
the big star.
Big star and completely unaffected by everything that happened. It is just, he was just the glue in this match, and now you have three just wild possibilities and changing directions coming out of this match. We've talked about Daya and how we think, you know, this is only going to lead to bigger things for him. I'm in agreement with you. I believe from the way Yoshioka left the ring, and Jay was sure to point this out on English commentary, and Jay, who was solo, no Ho-Ho Loon this month, and I thought Jay was great throughout this entire show, but especially these final two matches, the Brave Gate match and the Mask versus Mask match, that is exactly why Jay is so valuable to this promotion, because nobody is more qualified to call matches like this than him. He was sure to mention that when Yoshioka left, he left with the Dragon Gate theme song playing, not the RED theme song playing. And that, in this promotion, is something that certainly matters. And then you have Shun Skywalker, and I think, you know, we should probably maybe pick through his weekend a little bit, because I did not see his next step as we enter 2022. I did not think Shun Skywalker, possible leader of the next heel unit, as something that could definitely happen, and we are now staring at the face of that possibility, and I'm floored by it, because Shun has been in this company for 5 years, and he's gone from averting disaster being his main gimmick to a credible world champion, and now this confident unit leader, and this is such a drastic shift in tone from anything that we've seen from him over the first 5 years of his career. And I'm thrilled by the possibility of it.
Yeah, so he very much, it seems like, that the rest of Masquerade, as we saw through the Sapporo triple shot, it was only Jason Lee and Kota Minoru. They want nothing to do with him. There was constant misfires. Two of the three finishes of the weekend were basically him hitting one of his Masquerade teammates, and then that immediately leading into the pinfall during the Masquerade entrance. He gets a special award for me this week, Case. He is the dipshit of the week, because he did not read the room. He did not realize maybe I should tone down everything. Maybe I shouldn't tweet like all these like remembrances of Masquerade. Maybe I shouldn't come out in the full entrance and gear. Instead, we should just tone it down for a little bit, make sure we're all on solid footing. No, he comes out in the Masquerade mask. He comes out in the full jacket. Whereas as the weekend went along, Kota Minoru and Jason Lee, they first like wore it and then immediately took it off. They weren't going to stand and look at the crowd with this guy to wearing it, but not really like doing it. It's been tossing off immediately to basically just carrying it and dropping it in the ring before the entrance, where Shun Skywalker, just being a dipshit again, standing, does all the turns, and everyone else is just going like, what is this guy doing? So it's fascinating. It's something that also you look at Shun's 5 years previous, hasn't had a single inkling of a heel turn. And are you making me made that it's about time, and really for the few deficiencies in his game, him going heel and having a run as a heel could help flesh them out in a way. So it's all really compelling stuff from Shun Skywalker's standpoint to me.
Oh, absolutely. I really enjoyed the escalation that we saw in Hokkaido that Mike kind of laid out there, of Jason Lee and Kota Minoru continuously becoming less and less interested in doing the full Masquerade entrance, to the point where on that Sunday show, December 5th, they just carried their entrance wear to the ring. It's just a really, really strong visual there. To go back to the Cork and Hall main event, that Mask versus Mask match for just a second, the fallout of that match with Lee and Minoru and Estrella, and then Espy Kento joining the fray, everybody was so good in their roles. To me, that was just that was next level. That is why this promotion is what it is. And unless you're New Japan at your absolute peak or you're AEW at your absolute peak, that's why I don't think anybody touches them. Not to pick on anybody, but I don't see All Japan doing stuff like this. I don't think All Japan has had an angle like this ever.
All Japan has its own issues right now, okay? So let's be fair.
No, Mike, they're a really healthy promotion. Things are going really well there.
Things are great over there.
But this is just marvelous stuff. I should note the first show of that Hokkaido Triple Shot, the December 3rd show, Shun got on the microphone and said that he did what he had to do to save his own mask. He apologized to Masquerade, but it is what it is, and that he said they are still Masquerade, so let's do their best together. Didn't try to blame what Jay alluded to on the English commentary during the main event of that Corrigan Hall show, where Shun's mask was crooked and maybe he didn't exactly know he was shoving Dragon Daya into the arms of Diamante when he did. Shun said, hey, look, I had to do what I had to do. Let's move on, though, which is just such an interesting wrinkle in all of this. I mean, he is really aligning himself as being a guy clearly and consistently in the wrong as we now hit the 1 year point of Masquerade, and I'm sure the slow dissension that will come out of this. So for my money, all four of these guys, Diamante included because he was so good in that match, all four of these guys come out of the weekend with higher profiles, with raised stock. I can't wait to see what they do next. Really, really, really solid stuff from everybody involved.
Yeah, and it's something that if this ends up being a turn, it's going to be very fascinating. Probably the closest analog I can think of is Shingo Takagi's initial turn on BB Hulk is kind of like the thing there that one can go one-to-one, okay, that's kind of what's going on here. But it's also something that, like, now a lot of the open questions now have a process to be answered, I guess, is the thing I'll say. We see a lot more unaffiliated wrestlers right now. We see a face unit that was, like, the primary focus of the year looking like it's going away. And now we have a heel unit that has crossed its 30-year anniversary, one that is incredibly long in the tooth. Now we're starting to see things between this and between, and they haven't touched on it in the last few weeks, Eita with the rest of his unit and the idea that they're not super happy with all that as well. A lot of directions that can go to, a lot of open questions that I think that, unlike last year where we had some pretty solid answers of like, okay, RED is the top unit. They are the survivors of the three-way war. We have Natural Vibes coming back. We have Shun back now as champion, bringing a new unit into 2021. We're going to end this year not on a note of finality, I feel like. I feel like that this will be a year that when we have that final show in Kobe Sambo Hall in this month, we might have some directions, but things aren't going to be, there's not going to be a period at the end of 2021. We're going to get an ellipses at the very best.
Well, it's great because it's what I've been asking for all year, where despite the fact that they've had a lot of good shows in Kobe and Osaka and Kyoto and Fukuoka, it's like every good show was just good in a vacuum and then we're kind of done with it. And this promotion all year has really struggled to build to the next thing. Whereas last year, perhaps it was just the brisk schedule from July through December when they started running shows with fans again, but it seemed like there was always something to look forward to on the next show in 2020. And in 2021, it's been a lot of, hey man, that RED versus Masquerade match was great, and ultimately it didn't impact the ramifications of this promotion at all. It was just a really good match, and I've noticed it just from the people we communicate with, again, chomping at the bit to get these Hokkaido cards announced to see what's going on there. There's the Kyoto show that we'll preview coming up this Saturday. People very excited just at the announcement of those cards. I'm sure when we get the Corrigan Hall card next week, it's going to be another thing that generates some sort of buzz, assuming that Kyoto isn't some unmitigated disaster. So this is exactly what I've been hoping for in the promotion all year, is just something to keep me holding on until the next show. There are so many unanswered questions. We're only, whatever the story is, it seems like right now we're only at the first chapter, which is a really nice feeling to have, knowing that so much more is going to unfold over the next month, let alone what comes, you know, 3 months down the line, 6 months down the line, next December. Who knows what this promotion is going to look like?
Yeah, and it's something that, with the fact that they have a Corkin now, not this week, but we'll probably be talking about it, maybe not on this next week's show, but we will be reviewing in the next few weeks in the lead up to Final Gate. It's just a huge, huge thing that with the month set up as it was, with how things are looking going to 2021 or 2022, and the fact that how Dragon Gate sets up 2022, Case, if you think about it, like having these open questions gives you some spice on these usually very, very quiet and dry January shows. So it's the right thing to do. It's something that I couldn't conceive of last week when we were talking, but and of course we have to see how it all plays out, but at least like 7 days out, it looks like it's an unmitigated success. And now we look ahead to like Kyoto and you look at the card and it's like, oh, we don't have anything with Dragon Daya on that card. We don't have anything with Yuki Yoshioka on the card. All of Masquerade's there, but it's not a 4-on-4 Masquerade match. They have them kind of split up a little bit. It's all really fascinating stuff. And that was the big news coming out of Cork. And we did have one other big match of note that we should touch on before we move on talking about other big topics of the week. SB Kento made his second defense of the Open the Brave Gate title against his generational peer, Jackie Funky Kamei. He won with the SB Shooter, not exactly a playback of their match last month in Kobe Sambo Hall, but kind of brought it to Cork and Hall. I think it probably was the better match of the show, I would say. But I mean, it's just showing yet again, like this was the SB Kento episode of Dragon Gate. If you want to look at each show as an episode, he was out there at the start of the show. He tried to interject in the main event. General manager Ryo Saito, who's doing a great job, sent out all the rookies to take out REDs because they weren't supposed to be there. And then he took control at the end of the show with the unmasking of Daya. But he came out here, had another incredibly strong Brave Gate title defense as he like moves on, and yet again now he's 2-0 against Jackie Kamei in title matches.
I don't know if I have it in me to go on yet another SB Kento is a superstar rant. That's exactly it. He opened the show, he had the best match on the show with it, he closed the show. It's unconscious. It just doesn't make any sense, but I have nothing else to add. I mean, it's consistently jaw-droppingly great at this point. I will ask you, because I asked a lot of people this, I threw the question up in the Voices of Wrestling Discord. I don't believe I saw your answer if you did answer it. Which of these matches did you prefer? The first SB Kento versus Funky Jackie Kamei match in Kobe, or this one in Korakuen Hall?
Well, I saved it so we could talk about it on air, Case.
And this is what I like about you as a podcast partner, Mike. You are always thinking one step ahead.
You know, I could type it all out or we could talk about it. I'd rather have a conversation here. I think for me personally, there was something about the Kobe Samba Hall one that felt a little bit more raw, a little bit more brutal. And it was pretty much like the real like step forward. This to me, like it was good on its own merits, but this match is not going to be what this show is going to be remembered about. And whereas at Kobe Sambo Hall show, that was the big step forward for both of those guys. And just like the brutality, I would say, in Kobe Sambo Hall felt a little bit more, I said raw before, a little bit more vicious, a little bit more primal in a way. Like both those guys' chests looked like raw hamburger afterwards. This one had its moments, like the SBL on the apron, and a tremendous performance, like selling from JFK, but I think I'm going with Kobe Sambo Hall here.
As am I. I went 4.5 on that one, 4.25 on this one. You hit it exactly on the head. This was the second run through. You know, that first match was, I'm just going to repeat you, it was raw. This was a little bit cleaner, and I think that just comes down to a stylistic preference. I will say it lights such a fire inside of me. Everything from Kamei's Torbellino into the Crucifix Pin onwards, that's basically the last 2 minutes of the match, you get to see just how good these guys are. And one of the consistent things we've said about SB Kento in particular is we think this guy is, you know, going to be a future world champion, future Grand Slam champion. This is my guy. I think he's going to lead the company into the future. It's amazing that we're saying that, given that, at least to me, the weakest aspect of his game has been his actual wrestling, his in-ring performance. He's so good at everything else that I feel like it almost compromises his ability as a wrestler at times because he's been doing such character-heavy stuff. And what I've loved about these two Kamei matches is that he's been approaching these matches in such a different way. He's much more subdued, but he still has that just undeniable charisma that shines through. And this was one of those matches. This was not SB Kento versus Dragon Kid, where there's plunder and antics and, you know, rife with shenanigans. This was pretty straightforward, and it was a pretty straightforward example of how talented SB Kento is as a wrestler, and obviously how good Kamei is. He has that figured out. He has a formula that will last him for the next 15 years, next 20 years. I mean, it's very simple to figure out with Kamei what he's going to be doing going forward. This was yet another reminder of like, oh my God, SB Kento is just, he's something. He is really, really something. I thought the last 2 minutes of this match were, to use a term I used earlier, they were next level, and I really feel that way, and it's yet another classic on the board for SB Kento. 2 years into his career, both of these guys, 2 years into their career, that is hard to believe.
Yeah, and to touch a little bit on Jackie Funky Kamei, it's very clear, as you said, what they're aspiring him from to be. It is now like patently obvious that he's in Natural Vibes for a reason, and that is in a way to understudy Genki Horiguchi and KZ and be this very compelling underdog. You see Genki there was the one helping him to the back. He was the one really cheering on his charge, and you know he's going to be able, with like the Jackie knife and with like the crucifix out of the Torbellino, he's going to be able to draw those like incredibly deep two counts, and he's going, when he gets someone with the Jackie knife or gets someone with the crucifix, it's going to have a tremendous reaction there. And it's something that's nice to see, that as we are moving into 2022, they're no longer really the fresh blood here, as we now have the entirety of the future class now out there. And it's great to kind of see that both of these guys, like, they are tied together at the hip, and we know what they can do, and it's going to be fascinating 2 years, 5 years, 10 years from now to see how this develops in a way. And, you know, SB Kento, as you've been saying, he keeps on checking boxes off the checklist of when is it ready for SB Kento, and it's becoming more and more clear. It's like, oh yeah, that all those deficiencies we thought he had, that in-ring deficiency, he's clearing those things up really, really fast. And it's really kind of remarkable to see. I'm going to run down the rest of the Corkin results real quick, if you had any other thoughts on the show.
I've got thoughts on one match briefly, but feel free to run down those results.
All right. So this show, maybe you'll have a chance to listen to the show and then go back to Cork. And it was on the 1st. It'll be removed from the network on the 8th. Near sellout for Cork and Hall after a couple of tough months there. So things are kind of getting back their sea legs in a way. Natural Vibes versus RED opener. It was everyone else in Natural Vibes. KZ, Susumu, Genki, Shimizu, UT, Eita, Hulk, Ishida, Kai, and Hyo. Shimizu over Hyo with the King Press. After the show, he renamed himself again as Big Boss Shimizu because the manager of the Hokkaido Nippon Ham Fighters calls himself the Big Boss, and that was kind of the gimmick he had going into the Hokkaido weekend. Kind of somewhat a thuggish Yakuza-like kind of character was like this. They kind of play him off as like that, and that was the big thing for Shimizu coming out of that. Masquerade versus Unaffiliated Veterans match 2. Minoru, Lee Estrella, Mochizuki, Fuji, Kondo. Minoru over Fuji with the Engranaje. Match 3, it was two of the Dragons, Ultimo and Problem Dragon versus Dragon Kid and Strong Machine J. Strong Machine J, who knows about this guy, but he gets a win with the Machine Suplex on Problem Dragon, who is the next Open the Brave Gate title challenger in his hometown of Gifu coming up next week. 8-man tag.
Can we talk about that real quick? Can we talk about SB Kento versus Problem Dragon? Because I feel like we have two distinctly different opinions on that match.
Well, they need to have something to, because it's the same homecoming as Shun Skywalker's, and JJ tweet this. It's like, yeah, no, let Kamada have a title shot. I just have no interest in seeing Problem Dragon anymore, especially after this last weekend. So I just, he's fine. He's not obnoxious in the ring. He's not very good, in my opinion, but it makes sense. You're goosing a homecoming show.
Look, this was a very bad weekend for the Problem Dragon. He was in a lot of matches that I wish he wasn't in, and it certainly hurt my enjoyment of some of these shows. But I would go as far to say I am excited for SB Kento versus Problem Dragon for the Brave Gate belt. I'm assuming that will be uploaded to the network at some point, because I don't remember the last time there was a title match that didn't get uploaded, at least in the future. I have no reason to believe, you know, the last time Problem Dragon was in a Brave Gate match was 5 years ago, Dead or Alive 2016. It was him versus Maria during that really fun Yosuke Santa Maria Brave Gate reign. That was a really enjoyable match, and I think the same dynamics, although SB Kento and Yosuke Santa Maria ultimately have very little in common, they are both people that have proved they can work really character-heavy, really emotional matches. And I think Problem Dragon versus SB Kento in Problem Dragon's hometown for the Brave Gate belt is going to be a pretty damn good match. So obviously, we'll have to reconvene if that match is uploaded, because there is a chance that I am very wrong, and there is a chance that we sit down and we watch the worst SB Kento match of the year. But I'm excited for it. Why not put it on that show? At least we're having it here and not at Final Gate and not, you know, at a Corken Hall show or even a Kobe show. Put it here, it's harmless, and I think it could be a net positive in the end.
And it's something using SB Kento's Brave Gate run again as a 1A belt you can defend on these smaller shows. So it makes sense. I just am someone that, like, I was on Mandai Ryu years ago. So, like, the more I see him, the more I'm just like, and he is a compelling figure. He had that really bad neck injury, and he came back saying, like, hey, I'm now an uncle. I want to make sure my nephew now has a reason to be proud of his family name. So it's going to be like an emotional thing for the Kamada family and Gifu. I just, you know, like, it's a good test for SB Kento. I'll say that too. But it's just one of those things that, like, yeah, I'll watch it and review it. And maybe it's like this really cool emotional moment that only Dragon Gate can do. It's going to have to do, SB Kento's got to do some heavy lifting there for me to personally be super jazzed about it.
I think that's okay. That's fair.
Then the only other match we didn't talk about, 8-man tag, New Era Doi Yoshi, the Open Twin Gate champions, Naruki Doi and Takashi Yoshida, teaming with the Ahashi brothers versus High End. The Ahashi brothers get their first official win in Dragon Gate, not in the direct fall there, but they're on the winning side for once as they defeat High End, Yamato, Kagetora, and Bensuke. Yoshida over Okuda with a pineapple bomber.
No, it was a pineapple bomber. You labeled that correctly.
Okuda, not really like, I'm not going to say political hit here given his Ryzen performances as of late, but kind of an inauspicious way for the guy to make his return to active competition.
So I wasn't necessarily planning on talking about Okuda, but you brought it up and you said pineapple bummer, which was very funny. And now I'm thinking about Okuda. I know nothing. I don't think you know anything. This is a reckless, blatant question to ask, but I'm going to ask it anyways. December of 2022, is Keisuke Okuda still in Dragon Gate?
Oh, that is an interesting, reckless question. What can I say without us getting in trouble?
It's public knowledge, at least on the Japanese Wikipedia, and I don't know if we've ever said it on this show, but
okay.
Keisuke
okay,
Okuda is Ultimo Dragon's nephew is Keisuke Okuda. I don't know if we've ever said that, because for a while it was kind of hush-hush, but that is on Okuda's Japanese Wikipedia page, so I'm going to go ahead and say it here. Mm-hmm. So he's friends with Benkei, and he's related to Ultimo. This man, as far as I know, has a job if he wants it, but we'll do year-end of awards in a few weeks, and I don't know if anybody's stock dropped as much from 2020 to 2021 as much as Okuda's did. And over the past few months, not only has he not been lighting the world on fire with his matches, but there has been an overall feeling of disinterest, at least from what I can pick up.
Yeah, and the fact that it's good for PR, his kickboxing background. Like, they had all the K1 guys at that bigger arena Kobe show earlier this year. That stuff's good. Like, that's a smart thing, and that's engaging. But if he's really wanting to do K1 and Ryzen, and he's getting his ass kicked so much, like, at a certain point, it's like, how much of a good PR move is this? And you're right. Like, his star has fallen. Like, basically, ever since he lost the Bravegate, he's just kind of existed. And I think we should come to terms with, like, that Bensuke run that we were all kind of chomping at the bit for. It's probably not going to happen. So, going back to your overall question, is he still in the company at the end of next year? I think so, but I think what we're seeing now in his positioning and what he's given and his interest is not going to change, and that's kind of a bummer.
I'm worried about the fact that he's 0-2 in MMA fights because he is positioned in Dragon Gate as the MMA guy, and
right.
Boy, does that gimmick seem less cool now that he's lost two fights in the first round over the last 2 months.
In the first 90 seconds of each fight, and they're, like, bad losses. It's not like he, like, goes out swinging. It's like he gets caught, and someone immediately just, like, takes him out. So it's not like he's, like, being feisty about it. He just looks like shit in these matches.
No, he looks like a really bad fighter, quite honestly. It's been the worst-case scenarios of losses because he's looked like a goober in both of those fights. So Okuda's stock is really low. It's a little concerning. I want to throw that question out there just to see if you were picking up the same vibes that I was, and it seems like you were. The other thing I'll throw at you, my last thought from this Corkin Hall show, and then we can get through this Hokkaido weekend, but Mochizuki, Fuji, and Kondo versus the Masquerade trio of Minoru, Lee, and Estrella. Man, I need that as a Triangle Gate match at some point. I will be disappointed if we don't get a legitimate push for Mochizuki, Fuji, and Kondo in a Triangle Gate context within some point, as long as Kondo can still wrestle, because we know Mochizuki and Fuji are eternal. Those guys are going to go for as long as they possibly can. I think there is really something there with that trio, and I would hate to see it go to waste just having good matches on the undercard. To me, that is a team that is worth more in this promotion.
Right, yeah. And, I mean, they had the obvious chemistry with the Masquerade trio there. Like, Kondo and Estrella. Like, Estrella has gone from being pretty shaky in May to now. If you give him a bigger guy, he knows exactly what to do, and it just looks great. So, this was my favorite match outside of, like, the headline matches on the show. And one would hope so. I mean, we'll see. It's such, like, Mochizuki's such a fascinating person right now in wrestling because he does feel like he's splitting time, and the company does not necessarily, like, want him to have, like, the focus on him when he's also doing stuff in Noah, also picking up losses in Noah, also having to deal with Kenji Muto. So,
it's such bullshit he lost to Muto. I knew he was going to, but I'm still so upset about it. Because there's nothing I wanted more than for him to win with an inside cradle or some bullshit just so I can say that Masaki Mochizuki beat Muto in a singles match. And I'm so bummed out that didn't happen.
I mean, he might beat Muto at the end of the month, though. Probably not. But, you know, I just, like, you sent me that clip of that match earlier today, and I was just like, oh, Mochizuki, man, good on you for showing some discretion there.
Yeah, there's a clip on the Noah Twitter. They were uploading videos of the Corkin Hall show that took place on December 7th, and there's a clip where Mochizuki kicks Muto into the corner, and then Muto's seated in that position, and Mochizuki, who we all know, if you're listening to this podcast or if you've made it at least this far into this particular episode, you know that Masaki Mochizuki has the hardest kicks in professional wrestling. And he is laying in the lightest stomps possible on Muto. It is unbelievable just how light Mochizuki is working, given literally every other match he's had in his entire career. It is such an amazing distinction. And again, you know, more power to him for not killing the guy. But, oh, I'm so upset that he lost that match.
I see. There was more daylight there than a lot of matches on AEW Dark Elevation. That's what I'll say.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You can display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy video lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy video lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition. 1 second, door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
What a fascinating slight. That is such a unique way to insult something, but I knew exactly what you meant. So well done, Mike.
I mean, there's not some careful editing there. You could sidestep through some of those kicks, but hey, you do what you do with Kenji Muto. Moving on, we had the triple shot in Hokkaido. It was three nights, third through the fifth. Each of the shows, really, if you fast forward through like the everything of this, each show was about an hour 45. Each of them had five matches plus some bonus matches there. Interesting roster that they brought there. No SBK, no JFK, no Estrella. A lot of the vets stayed at home. But boy, and the thing that I really want to like talk about, other than we could talk about like the title matches and like the homecoming stuff and, of course, the Dreamgate run. This felt like a big week for Dragon Gate Future, given this and also Shoya Sato's debut match going up on the network. Is that just me, though?
No, they were easily the highlight of this weekend. We had a lot of Takumi Hayakawa action. We saw Fuda and Sato, and who is the fourth kid? I can't think of his name. I'm not
Fujiwara,
looking at it right now.
Takuma Fujiwara.
Thank you. A big Fujiwara weekend, actually. So four guys here who raised their profiles. I was a big fan of everything they were involved in, and I think that's we'll touch on a number of different things as we go throughout this weekend, but I want to focus on these rookies for now. Who really stood out to you?
Well, I mean, for me, just because I didn't get a chance really to see a lot of his future stuff because he kind of was brought in late future, was Shoya Sato. He is a unique person. We really haven't had a chance other than talking about his background last week. We haven't got a huge chance to kind of see him in ring, but he was the person that whenever I saw him between this and the debut match in Benkei in his hometown, I think there's a lot of stuff there with Sato. Like, I like Fujiwara. Fujiwara is probably my favorite person in his class, but you just could, is it just me? But I like feel like there's something different about Sato, and maybe it is that he is older and he feels more complete because of that. But I came away this week really impressed with Shoya Sato.
Well, there was a fascinating dynamic in his first match of the weekend. There's a handful of matches that I think are worth going out of your way to watch from Hokkaido. I will say up top, I did not go spreadsheet 4 stars or higher on any match throughout this weekend. I have a number of 3 3/4 star matches, but all of these shows, because they're 5 matches, are right around 2 hours, maybe a little bit shorter with the intermission. And if you skip the Problem Dragon matches, all of a sudden these shows are a breeze to get through. One of the matches that I do think you should go out of your way to see was on the first show. It was UT and Shoya Sato versus Kagetora and Ryu Fuda. The fascinating dynamic here of UT, who has been a pro in Dragon Gate now for 8 years, he is 28 years old, and he is teaming with the rookie Shoya Sato, who is 29 years old. And I thought that was just a really interesting dynamic. And then these guys went forward and had one of the best matches of the entire weekend, in my opinion.
Yeah, this was really, really kind of a cool thing. Like, you had Kagetora with Fuda, and Kagetora kind of was playing like a coach there. But you saw, like, Shoya Sato, and you see that he really has like found a way early on to implement being that judo player into his moveset that we don't necessarily like see. Like Fuda, we get the sense that he's like this, he is like this young striker that's going to be a problem. Fujiwara is the blank canvas that we're sorry, they'll be fun to see develop. Hayakawa is going to be the spark plug, and then you have the Ahashi brothers who are their own thing. But when you get to see like Shohei Sato with UT, and in a way UT kind of being the ring general of that, just makes it really kind of cool. It probably was, actually I'm looking at this right now, other than the main event, I thought that was the match of the night that they had there. And you like look at this class, and it's going to be so fascinating because they portray this class almost like a unit in a way. At Corkin, when RED tried to get involved in the Apuestas match, it was all the kids basically grabbing them, including Shohei Sato, basically potato sacking Hyo, clearing the ring. Other times in this weekend, whenever someone's like, I want more of a challenge, you had Ryo Saito just calling up a kid, calling up a future kid, and then that becoming a thing. And it's just so cool to kind of see like this cohesive rookie group in a way now, and it's something that I find really fascinating. Like they're keeping this group more cohesive than we've seen past rookie classes, really since like 2016, I would say, was the last one that felt a little bit cohesion beforehand.
Yes, very much so.
So I just really enjoyed that. Other stuff on the show, I guess I'll run through.
Well, real quick, let me run through my thoughts on this tag match real quick.
Oh, go ahead, sorry.
As I try to think into the recesses of my brain and what I was thinking in 2015, and what a dark place to think about my brain in 2015. But as I go back and I think about what I might have voted on in the Wrestling Observer Newsletter awards that year, I believe I voted L. Lindemann at his judo throw as the best professional wrestling maneuver of the year. It certainly seems like something I would do, so I'm not going to go back and check to confirm because it's terribly on brand of me to do that. Lindemann, still to this day, despite whatever he's doing, has an incredible judo throw. But as we talked about last week, Sato is a much higher level of judoka than Lindemann was or is or ever will be. And oh my God, the Shohei Sato judo throw, it's so violent and so fast and so intense. And it really, really is going to light a fire in me every single time I see it. I am not saying come 2022 that's my move of the year, but it is damn sure a candidate as of right now. And the other thing I'll mention here, we talked about Fuda a lot last week. His instant chemistry with Masaki Mochizuki, we kind of saw early stages, or the earliest possible stage, given that it was his debut match, of where he might assimilate on the roster. You know, Hayakawa, we're still piecing together. Fujiwara, I have a much better idea after this weekend of who he might be, but we're still learning a lot about him. The Ahashi brothers still seem like a blank canvas. I have no idea what they're going to look like as singles competitors. I have no idea what they're going to look like when they start winning matches. Fuda was someone who I could see his near future pretty quickly. I understand who he is and what he's going to be on this roster, given just from the way he interacted with Mochizuki. And the thing that I liked here was not only did he have instant chemistry with Mochizuki during his debut, but instant chemistry with UT. And it felt like the finishing stretch of this match when everything cleared out and it was just those two. That felt really hot and really exciting to me. That seemed like the start of something that I could really get on board with. Chemistry on this roster that is locked in the same way that Ishida versus Okuda is, or SB Kento versus Kamei is. We could have seen the start of UT versus Fuda really becoming a thing.
Yeah, and it's nice to see like this like integration with these guys that basically have just been having 5-minute exhibitions for the last 12 months. So it's cool to see that, especially for someone like Fuda, who I did not realize that Fuda is the second youngest member of this class because he looks older than he is. Like
no,
he's 20.
Looks like an old man. It's shocking. He's what? How old?
He's 20.
My God, yeah, I'm looking at his profile right now. So the rookies, if you're on the Dragon Gate website, gaiora.co.jp/Dragon Gate, the rookies have profiles up there now. Dia Inferno and Dragon Dia are still the same. We will likely get updated versions of those guys after the Corkin Hall show in a few weeks, but the rookies have profiles up there now. And Ryo Fuda, September 25th, 2001. That is hard to believe.
It's also something that like you like look at them and he has like such like an old man look. Like the thing is, he kind of reminds me of a way of a very young Toru Owashi in like his appearance.
that's such a good comp.
It just I can't shake that. Like he's heavily oiled up. He's wearing short tights. His hair isn't long, but and he's a thicker guy. And it just
yeah,
kinda,
no, he's
like,
Owashi if Owashi was ever on a treadmill. Like that's exactly what it is.
That's cold but fair. That's cold but fair.
Owashi's been heavy since his debut. This man is not exactly a cardio fiend. He's not Davey Richards doing an hour on the treadmill every day.
Nah, that's entirely fair there. I really love this class. It's going to be really a whole lot of fun to see them develop, and it looks like that each of them has their own aspect of their game there, or we could see them kind of develop that in a way that is really kind of cool. Other stuff on the first night, it was on the 3rd, it'll be up on the network till the 10th. The first part of the Masquerade Dissension that we were talking about started in match 1. It was Shun, Minoru, Lee versus Kai, Diamante, and Hyo. Kai got the win with immediate impact over Minoru. Bigger stuff we'll talk about as we go along. Strong Machine J defeated Takumi Hayakawa with a Liger Bomb that almost sent the poor guy through the ring. The aforementioned Kakator and Fuda versus UT and Sato. UT with the Pureness on Fuda. We had our Problem Dragon match. This time it was Ultimo, Doi, and Problem Dragon versus Hulk, Ada, and Ishida. Hulk put down Dragon with the first flash. And the main event for night 1 was High End versus Natural Vibes. It was Yamato, Dragon Kid, Benkei, and Keisuke Okuda versus KZ, Susumu Yokosuka, Big Boss Shimizu, and Genki Horiguchi. Yamato with the Galleria there. Was there anything else on the first night that kind of spoke to you?
Yeah, there's one match here that I really liked that I feel is worth mentioning. I did think the main event was borderline great, a near 4-star match. I went 3 3/4 on that, but it was, you know, your standard affair for what you would expect with those guys in the ring. I do think, however, the second match on this show, which was Strong Machine J versus Hayakawa, was interesting in the sense that you just talked about how it seems like this class is a cohesive unit. Whether or not they're labeled as that is irrelevant. It seems like right now there is a bond between all of those Dragon Gate future guys, and it comes across almost in their work, whether it's a singles or a tag, because I think we're just so excited at the prospect of what all of these wrestlers can be. No one has been disappointing yet. If anything, you know, a guy like Hayakawa or a guy like Fujiwara, maybe I wasn't in love with them at first, but after this weekend, I'm much, much higher on them. There's an interesting foil here where Strong Machine J is now doing his best work opposing this class. He's doing his best work since he's come back from injury this year, playing the bully and being quite literally the bigger man in some instances. There was one moment in the Hayakawa Strong Machine J match where they got a little tangled up on Hayakawa going for a crucifix pin, and Jay wasn't necessarily in the right spot, and it was noticeable that they just it didn't work, and it was a rare botch on a weekend of shows that was pretty clean. But other than that, I thought both guys looked really good here, and I like Jay being this foil to whatever these rookies are.
Yeah, and I think Hayakawa has kind of figured out that being the smallest guy in any match he's going to be in, just like doing stuff like that, that headlock takeover pin that he does where he jumps up high in the air to kind of get leverage is pretty neat there. And yeah, no, it's something where like my match of the weekend when we talk about December 5th, it has a lot of Strong Machine J just being a bully. And I think that for someone that things are kind of a little aimless for him right now, him being anti-rookie is, it's not a lot, but it's some direction that this guy desperately needs since kind of just existing and revisiting the Strong Machine Army since returning.
Yeah, very true.
All right, let's move on to Saturday. That was 12-4. We'll be up on the network until the 11th. Naruki Doi and Benkei versus Kai and Hyo. Kai got another win over a former Dreamgate challenger, Benkei, with the Meteo Impact. Ultimo, Strong Machine J, and Problem Dragon versus Gigi Horiguchi and the Ahashi brothers. Ultimo loves pinning Horiguchi with the La Maestral Cradle. So the Ahashi brothers, but by sake of like just being in matches, have avoided pinfalls or getting pins, but they've ended up winning. We had a special singles match, Big Boss Shimizu versus Takumi Hayakawa. He destroyed the poor kids in 42 seconds. He immediately asked for more competition, and this brought out General Manager Ryo Saito, bringing out the kids, and this time it was Takuma Fujiwara, 7 minutes and 49 seconds with another big press. Semi-main event, Masquerade versus KZ, Susumu, and UT. KZ won on Jason Lee with the impact after a misfire, Shun Skywalker clocking Kodama Inoue, getting him out of the ring, leaving Jason Lee prone there. Then the main event of night two was an 8-man tag. It was high-end Yamato, Dragon Kid, Keisuke Aku, and Akakatora versus Hulk, Ada, Kaito Ishida, and Diamante. And it was Hulk winning with the first flash on Akakatora there. I think that this show was, it was not the, I think I liked this show in total more than night one, but in a lot of ways it was just kind of cementing what the overall thought was this weekend, with Kai getting all the wins over former Dreamgate holders, the rookies kind of being at the beck and call of General Manager Saito, and then, you know, really a bunch of rookie stuff, to be quite honest here, and then Masquerade Dissension, in my opinion.
I really like this show. This is one of those where I would actually probably just recommend watching it the entire way through, because even the Problem Dragon matches, the 6-man with Horiguchi and the Ahashis against Ultimo, Strong Machine J, and the aforementioned Problem Dragon. And that is a fun match, because anytime Ultimo and Genki get in the ring, at the very least, it's going to be comedically entertaining. But they had a very real final 60 seconds to this match where they both worked really hard and really fast, which in 2021, speed is not necessarily something I associate with Ultimo Dragon, with all due respect, sir. He's not the fleetest of foot anymore, but he and Horiguchi really went at it in that finishing stretch, and I thought that was a cool little thing there. But Shimizu and Hayakawa, 42 seconds. I love the way they're using Hayakawa as this human projectile, basically. I mean, he is really rough around the edges in terms of what you might call his overall skill set, but very clearly effective in the role that he's in right now. And then you had this 7-minute Shimizu versus Fujiwara match, and this really opened my eyes to what Fujiwara can be. I feel like maybe I undersold him last week just because his debut was sterile. It was there, and it was effective, but it didn't really leave a mark on me. In this match, him kicking off with a beautiful springboard dropkick onto Shimizu, into selling, brief comeback, and it doesn't work out. In the end, he eats the Big Boss Slam, for the Big Boss Press, rather, for the loss. I really liked that match. It really opened my eyes up to what Fujiwara could be. Obviously, that 6-man tag, KZ, Susumu, UT versus Shun, Minoru, Jason Lee, you put those six guys in a ring, I'm going to like it. And my hottest take of this episode is that the main event, Hulk, Eita, Ishida, and Diamante versus High End minus Ben K, was probably my match of the weekend.
Okay. I could see that. It was, I could see that case. It was something that I had to rewatch this match twice. This was really, for me, they played the hits, but they played the hits in the right way, in a way. And like, just let things kind of flow there with it. I mean, you made sure to get your Ishida Okuda bit there. You had Diamante there, really, for Dragon Kid. You're able to call back to Yamato and Hulk. Eita being solid there. You had Hio coming in there and insisting on being like the king of camera work in Hokkaido as well. I understand that. I think the match on the night that I ended up liking the most, considering that I spent most of the episode slagging him, was that Trios match with Strong Machine J and the Ahashis, because I think that these three really, I think Strong Machine J works so well with those guys. I like what I see whenever Strong Machine J is with the Ahashi brothers. You get some second generation war there, and I really enjoy that.
This was a very good weekend for Strong Machine J, just in the sense that I was able to take a deep breath after that last show and go, okay, no issues. As far as I know, he wasn't hurt this weekend. He was in some pretty fun matches. He was good in his role. it's baby steps with Strong Machine J, but you know what? I like the work he did there. So I echo your thoughts there. And that main event, I can't disagree with any of that. They played the hits in a way where I thought they really ramped up the intensity. And that was what I liked about that match, was it seemed like, although nothing was truly at stake, it was just a BB Hulk homecoming main event, essentially, because you had Yamato in there with, you know, a guy's already beat for the title and Hulk, Eita, Shida, Diamante, not really in the Dreamgate scene right now. There was no Triangle Gate implications. It's not like Kai was in this match. In the grand scheme of things, it was a pretty meaningless match, but I thought they worked it with such intensity that I was really, really into it. So I went into this going, oh, that might be the least appealing match on paper of the entire weekend, because we know my thoughts on high end at this point, and it's an RED sign without something specific to fight for. But I ended up going 3 3/4 on this as well. I thought this was an incredibly strong match.
Yeah, no, and it's something that, like, it's very hard for me to be, like, down on any of these shows because how, like, they just flow well in the crowds. I mean, yeah, we are approaching 2 years of clap crowds, but, I mean, they are excited to see their hometown guys, even Hulk. And, you know, Hulk put on some extra sauce for this weekend, and I've really enjoyed that as well.
The later half of 2021, or I guess the latter half, rather, as I attempt to speak proper English, the latter half run of BB Hulk this year has been a delightful surprise. I did not anticipate really, really fun, I thought great, you thought very good, Dreamgate challenge at any point in this calendar year. I did not think that was going to be something that we would see from Hulk. And lately, a number of really fun matches, which continued into the final night where Hulk, you know, kind of played the main character of this show and was awesome in that role.
Yeah, yeah, and it's something that really, like, for RED and for, like, I just assume Hulk's kind of going to be in this role until like, he has, like, his final stretch of his career. This is perfectly fine, BB Hulk. If he's not going to be doing, like, tag matches and we can just kind of wash Hulk and Kai out of our system in a way, I think this works for him. I think this is pretty solid stuff. Should say, after the main event, we did have a Triangle Gate challenge. For the next night, it was KZ, Susumu, and UT making sure that KZ gets the big main event on night 3. So we ended up having a title match on this weekend. Moving on to Sunday, this will be up on the network until the 12th. Just running through results real quick. Yamato, Kakatora, and Fujiwara versus Hulk, Kai, and Diamante. Kai got the direct fall on Yamato. I guess let's just talk about this here. We now know that that's the final gate main event after this weekend. He did do a challenge saying, I want to face you at final gate. Yamato kind of begged off by saying, we're in Sapporo. Why are you challenging for Fukuoka? But, you know, the strength of his direct falls he's had, we now have that match going on at final gate. We'll see how they kind of build momentum for this case, man. But Kai's looking strong going into that title match, and we know the two have chemistry. It's just kind of prolonging this feud for further on.
Yeah, no, it's in a world of main events, that is one.
Yeah, yeah. Match 2, the Dragons, Ultimo and Problem Dragon versus Susumu and Genki. Susumu defeated Problem Dragon, not looking strong going into his Brave Gate match with the Yokosuka Cutter. Match 3, Hashi Brothers versus Doi and Strong Machine J. Doi won a three camel clutch on Ishinahashi. Bonus match, BB Hulk wanted better competition. He is his homecoming week, damn it. So Ryo Saito, he had to go book him some challenges. So Ryo Saito just started beckoning people to come out to face Hulk. The first one was Takumi Hayakawa. A Hulk won in a minute 53 at the EVO. More people came out. Hulk decided, I'm good, and went to the back. Semi-main event, high-end, Dragon Kid, Okuda, and Benkei defeated Masquerade. This time the misfire was directly shown onto Minenora, leading into the spear for the win. And then in the Open the Triangle Gate Championship match, the champions of Eita, Ishida, and Hyo make their second defense as Hyo penned KZ clean with a crucifix fold in 16:26. And let's just talk about that Triangle Gate match. I was kind of surprised that they penned KZ clean in his hometown.
I knew Natural Vibes wasn't going to win this match just for the sheer notion of anything of it would ruin the sanctity of UT versus SB Kento in Nagoya on the 19th, which is not confirmed, but that seems to be the direction that they're headed. And it didn't seem like just a week after losing the Twin Gate belt that Shimizu was going to pick up more gold. So I wasn't necessarily surprised by the result. I think it would have been more shocking had Eita or Ishida pin KZ. Given that it was Hyo, it's this weird Teflon thing. I don't think it hurts KZ at all. I think it only establishes Hyo as a more dangerous threat. Whether people want to take him seriously or not is another story, but a clean pin over KZ is a clean pin over KZ. That certainly has some cachet in 2021.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, I mean, KZ's kind of Teflon at this point. It's just kind of like, wow, that was the finish you did there. I thought the match was solid, though. I thought it was fun.
Do we think KZ is Teflon? Are we worried about him at all? I know I kind of gave you a brief temperature check on this last week with KZ, but you go through this weekend, it's his hometown. He headlines the first show, and it's on the losing side of that. Yamato pins Geki Horiguchi. On the second show, he gets the win over Jason Lee. And then on the third show, he takes the fall in the main event title match. You know, it seemed like KZ was very much over in front of this crowd. This show drew 437 people, this final show did. But, you know, I'll ask you the same question I asked you last week. Where are you at with KZ?
Really haven't changed, to be quite honest.
You didn't have a revelation in the 1 week since I talked to you about this?
No. I just, it's something that I think he's at this place. I don't think he's going to be cycled down from this place. I don't assume, and it doesn't seem like that there is a huge loss of interest in him, at least natively. It just is something that he's just going to kind of do this. And he's probably the one person that, like, we're talking about Shun going heel starting the show. KZ's probably the person that needs that heel turn more just because he needs, like, that thing to get him over that hump. And until that happens, I just kind of, unless I see, like, the crowds just, like, stop caring about natural vibes and stop caring about KZ, which I don't think will happen. I just think he's kind of treading water. I feel like that whereas some people are making a step forward and we see some evolutions with them, we don't necessarily see that with KZ.
For reference, the third King of Gate show in Hokkaido this year, because they ran that triple shot in May in the same building as well, the third show was headlined by Skywalker versus Okuda and KZ versus Eita. That show drew 339 fans, and as I said, for this Triangle Gate match, on the Dragon Gate website, they list 437 people in attendance, so clearly some interest in this match. Good booking by Saito on the fly here to give KZ a main event.
General Manager Ryo Saito is doing a great job, Case.
You're much more bullish on Saito than I am, but I like that he's trying hard.
Hey, eventually, I mean, he did kind of book the way into that a dragon lost his mask last week, so not a good look there, but I mean.
He went back to the board. Ooh, my bad, guys. Kind of thought Dragon Daya had this one in the bag.
Kind of thought we would just clear up that Inferno Yoshioka thing right there, or someone would get Diamante's mask, but ugh.
You know, it's the craziest thing in pro wrestling. You know, sometimes the guy that we thought was going to win doesn't win. My bad. And you know what? And the thing is, we're going to learn from this. This was a learning moment.
you know what? They called him in. He promised that he will do better, and he apologized, and he'll do better with his actions. His way of doing better with his actions is basically commanding all the rookies to take out people who want more matches.
I do love him summoning rookies seemingly with the snap of a fingers to get rid of people running interference on these matches. Just seeing six guys in track suits remove RED from ringside is an incredible visual.
See, he's doing great. He's doing a great job. we're just going to gloss over, you know, the match that, like, he booked that really, like, he could have just had it be Inferno versus Daya and all along, you know? Like, we're moving onward and upwards with General Manager Ryo Saito, who's doing a great job.
He's doing fine.
Okay.
Ryo Saito seems like the kind of guy that's going to ride a scooter in the Dragon Gate office. And I
Yes.
Look, I like to think I'm a pretty, well, actually I'm not a fun guy. I know for a fact having fun is one of my biggest weaknesses, but I just know that I couldn't tolerate Ryo Saito running my office. It just, wouldn't be able to do it. I'm a nose to the grindstone kind of guy, and Ryo Saito is constantly on some bullshit.
Oh, I'm someone that I'm self-motivated. Like, the worst thing that a manager or a boss can do with me is Hector, maybe like, hey, how's it going on this? I'll take care of it. You don't need to go, like, to do, like, temperature checks with me. And I could tell that Ryo Saito would just be, like, knocking on the door and going, like, hey, Micah, how's that project going? And I'll just be seething, going,
it's going, fine.
Going great, boss. Going great. So, yeah, no, well, we'll see how that all plays out for Ryo Saito, but at least, so you think he's doing fine? I think he's doing a great job, so I think we average that into that he's doing good. He's doing good.
I don't have it within me to give him a compliment. He could be booking 2006 Ring of Honor right now, and I would still go, he's fine. Don't get too excited about it. He's still got some room to improve.
I want to make sure I never have to have, like, a progress report done by you.
Yeah. Look, I am a miserable human in the workplace. I am no fun to work with, and I'm very much aware of that.
You know what was not miserable, though, Case? What my match of the weekend was? Take a guess.
I hope it's the opening match on this show, because if it is, we're going to have to do a virtual high five, because I'm sitting here thinking about how much I loved the opening match on this show.
I liked the opening match, but my match of the week... My match of the weekend.
Go ahead. Sorry. I'm shocked by that result. You took me back like I was a civilian casualty there. Please tell me your match of the weekend.
Oh, it was a little number that was the Ahashi brothers versus Doi and Strong Machine J. I adored this match, Case. I thought that this was fantastic.
You have the floor, Mike Spears, because I liked this, but if this is your match of the weekend, then you saw something in this that I did not.
Well, I think we've seen how... as we talked about today, a Strong Machine J works really well with the Future Kids, and he's already shown before that him and the Ahashi brothers, like, they don't like each other. They're both second generation wrestlers. Maybe Strong Machine J is jealous that he's not a thoroughbred. Maybe he's like, hey, I was here first, and now these two goose, like, coming out here being mama's and daddy's boys, just kind of irk him the wrong way. He worked so, him and Ishin, like, that is like some roughhouse fun there, like the two of them in this match. And then you have Naruki Doi, who, when he's been doing these matches with the Ahashi brothers, he just gets it. Like, the guy might be one of the smartest in-ring wrestlers working today. And for 12 minutes, like, the way that he built the finish, like, doing the crab on Ishin Ahashi, and right before he grabbed the ropes, he just dragged him in the middle, got on his back, craned back his chin, got the Cobra Clutch, and got the win. I just adored it. I thought that this was really cool. Like, this is a match that, like, we've talked about wanting the tag league back just for the Ahashi brothers. I would want to see Doi and Strong Machine J as a tag team there. Like, I know that Doi's right now humoring Cyber Kong right now, but... My idea when we did our unit shakeup, these four guys feature strongly in one of my units, and I think there's something there with them.
That's very interesting, because if it's not for the night two main event, I think the opener of night three would be my match of the weekend, on the sheer notion that I thought Fujiwara was so great in this environment, bouncing off of the RED guys. In particular, Diamante might have struck gold with a second opponent. We've seen what he could do for La Estrella, but watching that match and seeing Diamante and Takuma Fujiwara wrestle one another was eye-opening in the sense of, oh my god, you know, maybe it's not just a thing with Diamante where he's helped La Estrella's career. Maybe he's just much better than we even give him credit for, and most of this podcast this year has been singing the praises of Diamante, because there was just... not reinventing the wheel. There was just such classic underdog stuff with Fujiwara in the underdog position and Diamante being more dominant with him that was just great to see. It was just really, really fun to watch. I ended up going 3 3/4 on this opener. So once again, a very good weekend for BB Hulk. Diamante crushes it as always. For as hard as I am on high end, I thought most of their matches were very fun this weekend, and Fujiwara really left an impression on me. I'm really excited to see what is next for him, to see if he can continue to build on this or not, because I really liked his work on these shows.
So I think this might be a fun exercise right now to do. Like most of our exercises, we'll probably forget about this in a few weeks. How would you place your, and we don't have to do like 1 through 6, but who are you hot on in the futures class, and who might be the people that you want to see kind of, you want to see them develop more before you really kind of have a strong opinion on them? Like, well, let's do a heat check on these guys now, that just as we move into the last few weeks of the year.
I would say at this point, I know I need to see more of Sato, and he was very impressive here. If you haven't seen it, it's on the network now, his debut against Benkei. I thought it was a very efficient debut, and not only that, it's a match to watch just because I thought the atmosphere was really cool in that building. It seemed to be a pretty big house and a hot crowd specifically for Sato, which was nice to see. Hayakawa was a guy who, although I love him being murdered by BB Hulk, I have mixed feelings on Hayakawa because I want to see him in that role, but I also want to see what else he's capable of. I want to see if there's any sort of dominant streak that he has in him, or if he is just going to be eating shit on a regular basis for the next year, which is fine. But I'm going to continue to be a bit of a critic on Hayakawa, just because I'm not sure with that size and that frame that I can rely on him to be a star yet. I am incredibly high on Riki Ihashi, more so than Ishin Ihashi. I know we don't see eye to eye there. You're more of an Ishin guy. For me, Riki is the guy where it's like, oh my God, I look at that charisma and the way he emotes and the way he sells, and I think, wow, holy shit, if he won a match for once in his life, he would become a guy that would be incredibly over at an incredibly quick rate. And although I was very cold on him, this kind of leaves two guys. This leaves Fujiwara and Fuda. And coming out of this weekend, I would rank Fuda 1, Fujiwara 2 in terms of guys I am most excited about their futures.
All right. So we differ here, but I think that makes interesting conversation. I think Sato has something. And I think it's something that they're going to pull the trigger on a lot sooner than the others, given his age. I thought that his debut against Benkei probably was the most complete debut outside of the Ihashis at Dangerous Gate. But you could tell that they've really set up these matches so that these guys really prosper. But like, he's already like showing stuff like that. I feel like with like Fujiwara, I still think he is a blank canvas, and it's going to be really fun to watch him develop given his age and his size. Like, he looks like a guy that like if he put in like the time in the gym, hung out with Kodama and Nora, he could look like an absolute tank, and it'll be fun to see.
That's what I'm so intrigued about by Fujiwara, is that I don't even feel like we have his body. Like, his body's not developed yet. He looks like a child. The more I think about it and how good he was this weekend, I'm really, really excited about what he could be. And I'm a fan of his story, the fact that he went to the Michinoku Pro Dojo for his career day in middle school, like I mentioned last week. There's a lot to get excited about when it comes to Fujiwara.
Yeah. I think, like, if I'm going to be talking 5 years down the line, Fujiwara is the one I put my bet on. But for now, I think it's going to be fun to see him develop at this point. Sato is just someone that I think there's something there with him. I did pull up the attendance for that Yamagata debut. It also was Genki Horikuchi. It also was a Ryo Saito homecoming, so they did 2-1 here. But 520 people there, so like the ambiance there was real. Like, that was a bigger show for them, especially right now. I like Ishin. And I like Fuda a little bit more than Riki Ihashi. I think Fuda, though, he could go some places with him just kind of being a problem and him being just like an ass kicker. But I want to see that flesh out in him right now. And the fact that he's 20, there's time for that a whole lot. I think that he has something, but it's something that I don't know what it'll develop into. Whereas with Fujiwara, I'm like, okay, this kid's a blank canvas. He can put on a whole lot of muscle and just start throwing people around, or he could just become a very likable, compelling babyface. Like, there's a lot of directions there with Fuda. I feel like it's more focused, but I need to see other aspects of it to kind of, if he's cribbing and he's kind of like being modeled with like Mochizuki, Mochizuki also has the aspect of, like, you watch Mochizuki once, you're like, that dude just kicks so hard, that rules. You watch him more and you get deeper appreciation, like, this guy has a different way he puts together matches. This is the guy that will work over someone's stomach as, like, a focus of the match. And I feel like that, like, with Fuda, we kind of need that extra layer there. Ishin, I just think that he can end up being the bull in the china shop. I think that that as soon as he wants to kind of just become like a big beefy boy and throw people around, it'll be really, really kind of cool. Ricky, like, I know you're super high on Ricky. I know you think he has the top of the line kind of potential there. I think he's solid. Maybe it's, this is a me thing and the charisma doesn't necessarily work for me at this point. Maybe that's on me.
That's fascinating because it was such an instant connection, even going back to his future exhibition matches where it was an instant thing with me where I understood exactly who this guy is and what I want from him, and he's delivered on that so far.
Yeah, and I would say, like, that's probably on me there, and I'll own up to that. And maybe it's something that, like, when I, like, watch the matches, I'm more pulled towards Ishin, and maybe that is that Ishin's more my style of a wrestler, and I did not necessarily get my eyes, like, drawn to him. I thought Fujiwara was the most impressive one coming out of Future, honestly. Hayakawa, man, he has this role. I think it's a role that works for him, but it's also something that, like, he's so small. And I know that, like, we kind of say that, and he, like, does these things and he works in this role here, but it's just going to be so hard for him to break out of this role in my mind.
Which is not necessarily a bad thing. You know, if SB Kento is Dragon Gate's Adam Cole, Takumi Hayakawa is Dragon Gate's Spike Dudley, and Spike Dudley certainly had some career highlights. I don't think that's a slight on him at all.
Oh, not at all. Not at all. It's just something that, like, I look at him and I'm like, how are they going to, like, with him basically being squashed like a bug like this? And he's very good at that. He's very good at that. Other than, like, having him in, like, in a tag team with, like, Shimizu, or, like, becoming, like, Benkei's little buddy, you know, like, maybe he's someone that should get masked, you know, a lot along the same lines of Estrella. Estrella being masked is probably a solid thing for him because now you get to have, like, the intrigue and he's able to fly around a little bit. Hayakawa might need something like that to get out of this role.
That's a good point, because Estrella is not much bigger than him, but we don't think about Estrella being this super tiny guy. Now, if you go back and you put two and two together and you watch the exhibition matches of the guy that became La Estrella, and you compare him to Hayakawa, they're roughly the same size. Estrella might have 2 or 3 inches on him at the very most, but that's a very good point. That I don't necessarily think they need to hide Hayakawa. I don't think they need to repackage him. I like what they brought to the table with him, but I do think it would be advantageous in the long run if they drastically change his appearance, let's say.
Yeah, yeah. And the other weird thing about it is he's 24 and he looks like this, you know?
Yeah.
Not that there's anything wrong with that. It's just, like, it's not like you look at, like, Estrella and drawing the connection there, Estrella could grow still. And it's not like Fujiwara where, like, oh yeah, this kid is still really much a kid. We'll see how he fills out. Like how Kento Kabune has really, like, you can look at where he was in 2019, look at him now, and it's like 2 years later, you're like, no, this guy looks more like a grown wrestler versus like a teenager. Hayakawa, he might need that change. That's all I'm saying.
I think you might be onto something.
So, did you have any other big thoughts on Sapporo before we look at Kyoto and get out of here?
No, just to reemphasize, because I went through the rookie list in such a confusing way. Unfortunately, that's just the way I operate, and it's why my life is difficult at times, because I went through these rookies in a diagonal fashion, essentially. But just to reemphasize my rankings right now, and just in terms of guys that I like their potential, I would say Fuda 1, Fujiwara 2, Ricky Ihashi 3, Ishin Ihashi 4, Takumi Hayakawa 5, and an asterisk with Shoya Sato at 6, just because I need to see more.
Yeah, and I'll say for me, Sato 1, Fujiwara 2, Ishin 3, Ricky 4, Fuda 5 and Hayakawa 6. But also the idea of Sato, we still need to see more, but I like what I see enough to kind of bump him up.
Well, the good news is we're going to be seeing Sato this weekend in Kyoto in a match that I have very high expectations for.
Boy, howdy. We have a fun card coming up this weekend. On the 11th, they return to Kyoto. In case, you know what they say about Kyoto KBS Hall?
What's that, Mike?
Anything can happen in Kyoto.
Hmm.
So, I'm looking at the poster now. The Hashi brothers are front and center in this poster. They get like a nice like featured kind of thing here. They haven't changed around the poster enough, so you still have Yoshioka as Inferno on this thing, but and Daya Mass. But it just like you have like the nice like also featuring part of this, and you get to have the Hashi brothers there. It is on the 11th. It is at 6 o'clock local time. That is 4 a.m. on the East Coast. That is 9 Greenwich Mean Time. Thank you, Dragon Gate Ian, for putting the time zones there so I don't make myself like an idiot. Just running this all down, we have Masquerade, Jason Lee in Australia versus High-End, KZ and UT. Six-man tag, Ultimo, Benkei, and Okuda versus Don Fuji, Ginki Horiguchi, and Takuma Fujiwara. Match three, we have Natural Vibes, Susumu, Shimizu, and Jackie Funky Kamei. That's a fun trio right there. Against the aforementioned Shoya Sato, Ryu Fuda, and Takumi Hayakawa. Match four, we have New Era, Doi Yoshi versus SB Kento and Hyo. Match five, Shun Skywalker and Kota Minora versus Eita and Diamante. Main event, High End, it is Yamato, Dragon Kid, and Kagatora versus BB Hulk, Kai, and Kaito Ishida. So I actually, there's stuff I like in each one of these matches here. I think that this is a pretty compelling and interesting final Kyoto show of the year, Case.
I know High End was really enjoyable in Hokkaido, but let me just say that main event does nothing for me. That main event sticks out like a sore thumb because I think everything else looks really good. I am excited for this show because, you know, I think we're going to get a really hot opener with Leon Estrella versus KZ and Yuchi. That's a really fun match. I like match two with Ultimo and Bensuke against Fuji Horiguchi and Fujiwara. Natural Vibes versus the rookies is inject into my veins level of excitement. Even Doi Yoshi versus SB Kento and Hyo, that's a really fun combination. I'm looking forward to SB Kento and Doi tearing it up. Skywalker Minora versus Eiten Diamante, that is a fun match for a number of reasons. Even without the storyline, that would be a fun match, but with the added implications, I really like that. And just that main event, that is a 3-star special. That is just a disappointing way to close out what's going to be a really fun show.
I'll make the defense of the main event. Okay, so Yamato, Kai, BB Hulk, yeah, we know what we're dealing with there. Kagetora and Ishida have great chemistry. Dragon Kid works great with all three of these guys. Yamato and Ishida, they will have some fun together. We know what they will do together. The combinations here in the main event have potential. It's just how much of the triangle of bullshit we have to put up there.
Yeah, that's an interesting sell. It's not going to do it for me, but I appreciate where your heart is here.
I'm just like fired up after the four shows, and I want this weekend to be great, you know? And I don't have to watch Problem Dragon again.
Well, my match of the weekend was night two. It was a High End versus RED match, so they certainly have chemistry within them. They have the capabilities of putting on a great match, but I don't know. There's something about that match just bums me out because I think the rest of the card looks so good. Maybe I'm off base, maybe other people don't feel that way, but that match six is just not what I want from this promotion right now.
That's fair. And again, they have another Korakuen next week. And then we're like full steam. Early Final Gate this year, Case. It's on the 20th. It's 26th. I'm sorry, my eyes are failing me. I'm old now. So we're down to the final four shows of 2021. So we've got to start thinking about these awards, man.
Yeah, we will certainly have to cover that in just a few days, or in a few weeks, rather. I was looking at my top 10 matches of Dragon Gate this year, and I made a very interesting observation about them, something that I'll be more than happy to share in just a few weeks. So stay tuned for that.
I am looking forward to that. I also, as I'm looking at the Twitter, just one last note before we get out of here, We are getting some Riku, Dragon, and Fukuoka at Final Gate. Ultra Soki and Tarami Saver will be appearing there. And I know Tarami Saver is someone that I shouldn't know, but I'm looking at these two guys and, you know, the Dawn of Okinawa did it again. The Dawn of Okinawa has done it again, and I'm stoked for that as well.
I hope these guys come out lock, stock, and barrel, and I hope all the Riku Dragon guys do the Gracie train on their way to the ring. I hope it's an Okinawa-led Gracie train, and all of their homies show up to this show.
I mean, you'll get all of them. You'll have Shuri Joe coming out leading them. You'll have Gherkin Mask, Hibiscus Me in there for it. I mean...
That'd be such an incredible visual, a Gherkin Mask-led Gracie train where it's just a bunch of junior heavyweight Japanese masked wrestlers. Oh my god. I'm not saying I can book your territory, but if you gave me the pencil and you gave me Gherkin Mask, the possibilities are endless.
I mean, I can book your territory, and it is going to have a lot of Gherkin Mask. All right, dude, anything you want to hit on before we get out of here?
I've got nothing else.
All right, thanks for listening to Open the Voice Gate. You can follow us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. Case is at underscore in your case. I'm at Fujiheya. That's it for this week. We'll be back with you next time talking about the final Kyoto show in 2021 and probably a Korakuen preview. Take care, everyone.